Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Mr. Kraz and Garth. It's Thursday, the 15th of January, 2015. If folks would like to get this podcast, it's available from iTunes, so you can download and subscribe there. And you can also get the podcast from podomatic.com. That's our main podcasting website. So look for the Kraz Files at podomatic.com, and you can also get the podcast from spreaker.com. You can catch up with us on Facebook. Just look for Adam Kraz, and that's our Facebook page, and lots of stories going up there. And also over on Twitter, look for the Kraz Files. You can send us an email to thekrazfiles@yahoo.com.au, and you can log on to thekrazfiles.com, which is a link site. So always many great links going up there every couple of days, and that's always C-R-A-Z for Kraz. And thanks for listening to our podcast. Okay, Garth, we're on the air. We are ready to go. We're plugged in.
Yes, for all brand new for 2015.
Yes.
So let's hope we can clean up some of these things or help clean up some of these terrible things that are happening. And
they've let us
with
on
Judy
for
aboard
year.
For an hour, yes, it's going to be very interesting because we need a shake-up, particularly in this country. I was just going in Australia, this is the big bronzed Aussie Australia, we were the biggest importers of child snuff movies. Now, this is horrific. This is absolutely frightening. And we were also considered the gay capital of the world. Now, that's Australia. And a lot of people in this country don't understand that. And that article you sent, Adam, the pedophile ring exposed in the Australian government, it's been going on for as long as I can remember, and I've been around for quite a while. And there are many people have tried to expose it, but they've been quite shut down. They've been character assassinated and various other methods of closing the whole box and dice down. But they were in the years before we had the internet, and now they're having a lot more trouble closing people down now who have the courage to get up and speak out about this dreadful crime, on our children.
Well, that's what we're doing, Garth, and we've
yes.
been doing since we started this podcast. As you know, we were doing other podcasts before, which are very successful now, but it just seems that when you talk about this, everyone heads for the hills.
Yes.
But we've been trying as best we can to expose it, and that's why we're here today with Judy Byington, I'm fascinated with her work, and we wanted to get her on today to delve a bit deeper into this, because she's done it for so long. So Judy, welcome to the Kraz Files. How are you going, and thanks for having a chat with us today.
I appreciate the opportunity of coming on. It's quite an honor to be asked to be on your program. I understand you're quite popular.
Yes, and I actually have been looking at your work for quite a while, you know, before I sort of knew who you really were, that's all. And I was listening to some of your online talks and things like that. And as I said to you, it sort of connected straight away with what Garth and I have been doing. We've been quietly plugging away here since we started, haven't we, Garth?
Yes.
Just talking, just trying to at least get off the couch and away from the TV and talk about it. But as I said, Jenny, yeah, it really is a subject that gets people sort of shying away and running away. They don't want to talk about this. And as Garth said, it's really bad in Australia and New Zealand. We've had many, many just TV celebrities and stuff now being exposed, haven't we, Garth? Sort of started around Jimmy Savile over there in England, and we've just had a whole string of them, and it just keeps going.
We can't seem to get to the bottom of this, you know. So it needs to be talked about and brought out into the light and discussed. So that's why you're here today to talk to us. And
well, the bottom's pretty deep, and it's I don't know that we're going to get to the bottom of it.
I think, Judy, I don't think the people at the top, the real perpetrators, are ever going to be brought to justice. I really don't. I just think as we get closer to cutting the head off the snake, they keep hanging people out to dry. But the real perpetrators, I don't know if they'll ever be truly brought to justice. You know, it just seems so deep, this, all over the world, in every country. Political, police, even child protection groups are in on this. It's just absolutely crazy.
It's pretty permeated in all of our different societies. I've been pretty impressed with Kevin Annett and the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State and what they've been doing over in Brussels with the international courts there, where they have been trying this members of this Ninth Circle Satanic Child Sacrifice cult. But, of course, they've had a lot of challenges with that, but at least it's a start in that direction.
Yeah, Garth and I, haven't we, Garth? If you go back to, right through last year, we were talking about Kevin Annett's work in Canada with the Mohawk children there in these places that were set up by the Catholic Church and the Queen of England, Garth, and these the satellites they used, all these ground-penetrating pictures to get these graves, and it's happening all over the world. And so Kevin's work is amazing, and we always try and put that up on our side and talk about his work all the time. And then when I found out that you were sort of connected with him in these ways, that you know, that's why I wanted to contact you, because I talked to so many people about this, they'd never heard of it. Never heard of what happened to these children in Canada. And if you dare mention the Catholic Church or the British Royals, they run for the hills. Garth, mm-hmm. So no one wants to know about this, but it's there. It is. I mean, you know, it's
people don't want to know what's going on all around them. They really don't. I didn't want to when I first realized that this was going on. I didn't want to acknowledge that this was happening to children, and yet it's going on, and it still is.
It is, and it's, as we said, it's happening right under our feet in Australia and the United States. Everywhere, it's still going, Garth. It's really, really frightening. But Judy, do you want to, maybe just let us know a little bit about your life and your work and how you got into this? And we'll lead up to your book, The 22 Faces, which we're into. Do you want to just talk to us a bit about your life and where you're from? And I know you're retired now. How you got into this field?
Actually, I got into it after I retired. I had to retire early. I was a therapist for many years. And I had to retire early because I had an ill child. And because they knew I was retired, there were some ritual abuse survivors who came to me and asked me for their help. This was around the time the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints did what they called an LDS report on ritual abuse. The background of that was back in the 1980s, there was a book that came out called Michelle Remembers. That was a child up in Canada who was ritually abused. She was turned over to a satanic cult by her mother. She was ritually abused. And then when she was older, around 40 or so, I believe, she began having some of her repressed memories come forward about this ritual abuse, and she went to for treatment with Dr. Lawrence Pazder. And Pazder and her wrote her biography, Michelle Remembers. It came out in 1980 and became very, very popular. Because of that, a lot of ritual abuse survivors started going to their therapists and the police entities and saying, you know, this happened to me also, and I'm having these memories of all this ritual abuse in childhood. Well, around this same time, the LDS Church, I'm from Utah, where the LDS Church is located, and it's a worldwide church, 15 million members or so, but the headquarters are here in Utah, and they have what they call family services, which is their counseling arm. They were getting a lot of referrals. of ritual abuse survivors saying that they had been abused as children. And president of the church at the time was Ezra Taft Benson. Ezra Taft Benson used to be Secretary of Agriculture for Dwight D. Eisenhower. But he was president of the church at the time. And he there was another case that came up. It was a little baby that was ritually abused. The body of a little baby was found up in Idaho, quite close to where President Benson grew up. And that hit the news big time, and the state of Idaho actually had formed the first ritual abuse law in the nation, in the U.S., for ritual abuse around the body of this little baby that was found in a dumpster. So all of this was going on, and all these ritual abuse survivors were going to family services. So President Benson ordered a study to be done on this. And it was a 12-man committee. They spent about a year. They went out and interviewed over 100 ritual abuse survivors. Elder Glenn Pace was in the presiding bishopric of the church at the time, and he was asked to head this committee. I've had the only interview Elder Pace has ever given on this report. But the report came out in about 1990, and it is part of that report says that 45 members witnessed human sacrifice. Well, it got onto the World Wide Web a couple of years later, got snuck onto the web, and produced all kinds of publicity in that because of, you know, the statements that were made in and some of the conclusions that they came to. They actually found a lot of perpetrators. They hired a genealogist. They trace the background. A lot of the ritual abuse comes down in families. It's multi-generational. You know, fathers will abuse their own children, and the children grow up, and some of them go into the cult, and some of them become survivors and try to get out of it. But they found a lot of perpetrators, and they excommunicated the perpetrators that they found, and then they turned over their information to the Utah Attorney General. The Utah Attorney General hired that went. You know, there's a lot of things that went on. They did their own study, the state of Utah did, and they found much of the same information that was in the LDS report. So they hired some special investigators. And the first arrest of these special investigators was the father of these, father and uncle of these two women that came to me and asked for my help. And they had just arrested this man, and the Utah Attorney General wasn't filing charges against him for murder, and these women had seen all kinds of child murders during childhood, and they were cousins, and they verified each other, and they wouldn't consider that part of his arrest. They just tried him on sexual abuse of one of the children in the family. And so these women were wanting to get more evidence on him and get them to, you know, file more charges against him. So they came to me, and they said that they were having they were both 23 years of age. They were both mothers. They hadn't seen each other since childhood. They'd been together at many different satanic ceremonies where they had seen murders and, of course, been sexually abused. Sexual abuse is always a part of ritual abuse. They'll sexually abuse these little kids, and then they'll make them watch the murder or make them participate even in the murder of other children. And so these two women had gone through this as children, and their memories have been repressed. And when they started to come forward, which is very normal for a ritual abuse victim, they'll come forward 20, 30 years later with these memories. They were having these like memories of seeing the very same murder. So they wanted me to help, you know, verify what was going on. So that's kind of a long story of how I got involved in it. When I was in therapy, women would come to me and say things like, I can't remember my childhood, or I'm having these headaches and I, you know, have these periods of time loss. I really didn't understand what was going on then. Now I realize, as I look back on it, they were likely ritual abuse survivors that were trying to get some help at the time. But when I was actually a therapist, I didn't recognize it, as many therapists don't. In fact, during this time period when all these people were coming out, the American Psychiatric Association wouldn't recognize, it's called dissociative identity disorder now. It's the same thing as multiple personality disorder. It's just what they have changed the name to. But they didn't have treatment modalities for multiple personalities. And so there was an association formed back in the 1980s after Michelle Remembers came out, because all these different people were going to therapists wanting help. It's called the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Disassociation, and it's a worldwide organization, and it can it has many therapists, and they generally treat ritual abuse survivors. So this problem is just all over the world, and yet it's not really well known by the common person, because it is so well kept.
Yeah, that's right. And your book, 22 Faces, this is pretty remarkable. Just getting through it now, I think Garth dropped off. Garth, you there? We'll try and get him back. Something's happened in the country, Jenny. He's in the country. I don't know where he went. Anyway, Garth's probably finished. I think he's in there. But this lady that you're helping and work with, unbelievable. And she, as you said, she's a survivor of this, and it looks like she went through these rituals or sacrifice type ceremonies when she was only little, which is unbelievable. And 22 different personalities, and I can tell you, Judy, just to say this, I worked at a place a few years back, and there was a man there, he was European, maybe Polish or something, and he was quite sick, and he had multiple personalities, and he was on quite heavy medication, but they wanted him to sort of work, and this place employed him, and he was pretty good, but he had these different personalities, and it was really remarkable to see. I counted at least five or so from him just while you were working with him, and so mm-hmm. I've sort of seen it. It was really amazing. He had like a really angry one that would scream, and he had one that was like a child that would sort of cower, and then he had a giggling one, and all sorts. Eventually the screaming sort of got worse and worse, and that's all he was doing. And so they had to let him go. I don't know what happened to him, but I've seen this, you know, right in front of me. And you're talking about, in this book, where this Jenny Hill had, 22, was it, different personalities, where her mind must have just been ultimately just fractured, you know, by this abuse. And so it just seems to me, looking at this, that this is, I would immediately tie this up with the government, you know, sort of this kind of deep CIA stuff. They're working on God knows what they're doing today. But obviously, where are you at with this? How is this... Jenny Hill going now? How is she, does she still have all these different personalities? Is she able to control them? How does it work? Has it got worse over the years? Has she got better?
Jenny is writing her biography has really helped Jenny understand her multiplicity. But let me just back up a little bit to give your listeners a little bit of more of an idea of how Jenny came to be with 22 multiple personalities.
Yeah, very important.
These women that I worked with, we went around to different Coven sites, and they had a lot of memories come back, and we gathered a whole bunch of information that their memories corresponded with each other, different details of even connected them up with some of the victims that were killed. So we took this information to the Utah Attorney General Special Investigators. They ended up not using it, and the man actually got off on a crook of the law, and he's still running around doing his thing. But I went to the FBI. I went to different legal people about this situation. One of the persons I approached was an FBI agent. The very same day I approached this agent with this information, Jenny Hill had called this very same agent, she wanted to find the parents of a little girl she saw killed, and you read about that in 22 Faces. The FBI would not open a case for either one of us, but he did put us together. And Jenny asked me to write her biography, so we spent actually 20 years writing her biography. Now, how a personality is formed within a child, it's a form of mind control. It's a deliberate form of how you control the mind of a person, is that you'll put a child in a traumatic situation, and in order for the mind of that child to handle that, say the situation is rape, you know, in order for the child to handle that rape, the rape is usually by a person that's very close to them, oftentimes the father. And as their mind goes through this, you know, physical trauma, they will actually form a thinking pattern. The thinking patterns will separate, and the memory of that rape will be held. It's called a repressed memory. Think of your mind as a tree, and the trunk of that tree is your core personality. The branches of that tree hold the memories. Well, the memory that's held of that rape for that child is held out on that branch, but the branch isn't connected to the tree. Our memories are connected by electrical circuits, and the electrical circuit isn't there. And memory's still there, but the part that connects it to your everyday thinking isn't there. And it will only connect when the mind feels safe. So usually it'll take, you know, a long time, 20, 30s. In the case of the woman up in Canada, it was 40 years before her memory started coming back. Well, Jenny's, when she was, I think it was 23, age 23, she had become a nurse, and she went to the Utah State Psychiatric Hospital to apply for a nursing job interview. And you'll read this in the book, but during the interview, she changes personalities.
I heard that on an interview. That's fascinating. Yeah.
And so as she changed personalities, of course, they recognized that she was multiple, and they kept her there in the hospital, and that's where her healing began. The healing is remembering the memories, processing those memories, and accepting them as part of you. Now, Jenny's in the beginning of 22 Faces, there's an alter personality chart, and you'll see three different alter families, because during the abuse, say the abuse happens and she's raped more than one time. Well, the alter, Jenny's particular alter, head alter JJ that handled the rape situations, she only liked the nice parts of sex. The pleasurable parts of sex. So when she would get into a painful part, she would actually create another personality. So from that, she forms, you know, different personalities, and it's called an alter family tree, where different personalities are formed from the main, you know, alter.
Yeah.
Jenny has actually three different main alters. She has her sexual abuse alter. She has her ritual abuse alter that handled all the pain of the ritual abuse that she went through. And then she has a third alter that was formed when she was gang raped as a teen. She was gang raped. And so that formed an alter personality. But the bottom line is these are all part of her. They are not separate persons. They are part of her personality. They just are not connected, as we would like to connect, you know, our whole personality and, you know, have it function together. But as these alters, they actually are formed to protect the personality. And in you'll see in Jenny's book where there are times that they'll take over, you know, trying to protect her, even in situations where she doesn't need to be protected, but the alters think she needs to be protected, so they will take over and, you know, handle the situation.
Yes.
Did I answer your question? I kind of got off on a tangent there.
No, I guess like as well, Jenny, with these people as well, I guess in their lives, in situations, as you said, where they may feel threatened, especially in sexual situations, it must be so hard. Maybe, you know, some people are married, you know, and I guess as you said, yeah, they create this these characters to protect themselves, and I guess they're not really knowing what's going on, and they can just keep creating different types of characters throughout their lives until they get some type of help. With someone like Jenny Hill, when they're taken in to get help in these clinics, and they have to, as you said, acknowledge and accept these alter egos, how hard is that to do? There must be, when they're sort of confronted internally, if you know what I mean, with these characters, it must be so hard for them to get better, you know what I mean? How long does that take? Are some people able to get better, or there's no hope for them? How does it work? Sorry about that, folks. We just had a bit of problem with Garth. He's back. Garth, you there?
Yes, I'm still here. I don't know what it was, because my mail was working.
That's all right.
My browser wasn't working, and I couldn't get through Skype. It wasn't working either. So
that's okay. Bill Gates is probably cutting you off.
Yes.
I was just asking Judy about this case, and just with Jenny Hill, for example. You were talking, Judy, about how some of these people in their lives, I guess, when they get into difficult situations, or they feel threatened, for example, especially sexually, they create these alter characters. And I was just wondering, you were talking before about people like Jenny Hill, they go in and they get therapy, and they have to sort of they have to bring these characters out and show them that it's part of them in order to get better and start the healing process. How hard is this to do with some people, where in order to get better, they have to face, you know, these characters that are hiding in them, almost, as you said, is this kind of family tree. How hard is it for some of these people to get better, and how was it for Jenny in particular to face these characters that she had created through this terrible abuse? It's just so terrible, like, you know, 6-year-old kids to go through this. And as you said, it later on in life, it just starts manifesting when this person probably doesn't have any control over it, you know?
Well, it's a very difficult process, but it's a very necessary process for them to go through in order to become well again. People ask if, you know, they ever, you know, fully integrate and become a whole person. I have met very, very few who have fully been able to integrate their personalities. A lot of it is because some of the memories are so gross that they don't want to remember them, you know, and you can't blame them. And as a result of that, the memories stay repressed, and that causes stress in the body system and actually can cause them physical problems as well. They're called body memories. I have a friend who has 50 multiple personalities, and as a young child, she was hung on a cross, and so her body memories in her wrists created real physical problems. She actually had to have them operated on when her memory came back about that, because the physical damage, and I have no idea, you know, how this happens, but the physical damage didn't come forward until a memory came forward. And it was when the memory came forward that the pain came forward of her hanging on that cross, and it caused physical damage in her wrists, and she had to have carpal tunnel, you know, surgery on both of her wrists. Prior to that, she showed no signs of any problems with her wrists until that memory came back. But the memories that stay in there do cause stress within the system, and can cause them very, you know, huge physical problems just because they haven't processed the memory.
Yeah, they're still deep in there.
It's a lifelong process. I don't know that, you know, they ever, quote, fully heal, but they certainly want to heal. They certainly want to be normal, and so they make a lot of efforts to do that, but part of it is that people don't believe them. You know, people around them don't believe them. Mm. They go to therapists that aren't trained in this, and they don't believe them. They have perpetrators. Some of their perpetrators live close by and are deliberately trying to keep them, you know, sick and unable to function, so that they don't get uncovered on what they actually did. And so they're dealing with perpetrators that nobody believes are perpetrators. And there's just a huge amount of problems involved with this ritual abuse survivor.
Isn't that incredible, Garth, that these evil people are perpetrating this on these young kids, and then when they're getting older, these people are still around in the same neighbourhoods and putting pressure on these people to feel guilty and not to say anything. So it's like a double whammy, isn't it? You know, it's not only that they're not going to get better, but they're made to hide it even worse and feel scared and threatened by these same people who are basically committing these atrocities on these people for their entire lives who never did anything wrong. It's gobsmacking, isn't it? Did you get into Judy's book? How did you go?
I'm about three quarters of the way through it.
It's a heavy read, isn't it?
It's a very heavy read.
Yeah, I didn't expect it, so I'm going to need a bit more time. I had to go back a little bit. I don't want to sort of rush it, you know, so I want to really sit down and get into it because it's a dense read. It's not,
you know. The part in that was that what I'm trying to understand is how they can control the mind, like in the case of Jenny, where they would give certain signals and she would obey them and she would go with them. Mm. This must be frightening.
That has to do with the alter personalities. How they control is that when they initially give them the abuse that they go through, they will use sight, sounds, smells, you know, all kinds of things during the abuse that, okay, say a child is being tortured, you know, and during that torture, first of all, they'll get them on a certain wavelength. And the mind on that wavelength, and that's where the alter forms is on certain wavelengths. But during that abuse, they may smell incense, or they may show them the picture of a rose, or they may, you know, show them something during the abuse so that later on as an adult and the person sees, say, a rose, that may trigger, you know, that alter to come forward. And when that alter comes forward and the perpetrator is there, then the perpetrator can control the alter because they're the ones that, you know, that formed the alter. And so they can, you know, they will have power over that alter, and they can tell them to do things, and that, you know, childlike alter will do what they've been told, because there is their perpetrator in front of them. See, the alters, some of them grew up with Jenny and are the same age as Jenny. Some of them remain children at the same age where she was abused. Mm. And so, say a sexual abuse alter comes forward that's only 6 years old, and the perpetrator is there and they say, you know, we're going to have sex now, you know, then they have power over that person, and that's how they mind control that person is through use of the alters.
Mm. Manchurian candidate.
Dear oh me, yes. And to do that, do they must have very strong specific methods of being able to cause the child, in this case the young girl, Jenny, to split the mind. You know, I'm finding it difficult to try and understand, you know, because it's a very hard thing to try and get your mind around, Judy, how they can actually make someone split their own mind, particularly in the case of 22 times, my golly.
As far as I know, the only people that are multiple personalities are people who have been abused since early childhood.
I see, yes.
The common age is about 4 years old as they will start sexually abusing these children. But I have heard other people with multiple personalities or disassociation that they were abused actually during the womb or in the womb, where they would electroshock the mother deliberately in order to fracture the personality. And so as a very young child, this person's personality starts to naturally, it's a natural thing that happens. You know, if you go through a traumatic situation, say a car crash, it's very common not to remember that. That's called disassociation. That's the very same thing we're talking about. Is disassociation. The memory of that car crash is disassociated from your core personality, and it's out there on the branch of the tree hanging without anything to connect it to your core personality. So the very same thing happens, but with a child, it forms distinct personalities or fractures of personalities. And the key is to get them when they're very, very young and start fracturing the personalities then. And then it's much easier. Like with Jenny, she has these three different alter families. It's much easier to form the other alters once the main head of the head alter has been formed. Then it's much easier to form alters underneath that head alter because it's already a split personality to begin with. But it only happens to children. With post-traumatic stress, that's more, you know, veterans of war and going through things like that. And it's not, it's a little bit different than multiple personalities, but it's actually the same thing. It's disassociation, you know, from the events. And then when the person gets back from the war, they start having these, you know, nightmares and whatever of these events that happened during the war. It's the same thing. It's this disassociation of the memory. But with a young child, it's much more separate because of the growing brain of the child. It's a maturing brain. So they're able to do it a lot easier with a child.
Gee, that's frightening, isn't it? And in Jenny's case, her father was molesting her at a very early age, and he wasn't involved with that satanic group. So Jenny sort of got it, her first split of her mind from the attacks her father was having on her.
Well, I can tell you haven't finished the book yet.
No, I haven't. I've got to the stage where she's getting older. She's been through uni. So there's a lot more to come, is there?
There's a lot more surprises to come, yeah.
Oh, dear. I would have finished it, actually. I wanted to finish it before you came on, but I have family up here finishing Christmas anyway. But it's a fascinating read, and I do hope that more and more people get onto it, because I think people, like I was doing, I was hiding away from the fact of this is happening under our very noses to our children all over the place.
It is. And one of the reasons we wrote the book, see, when Jenny first met me and wanted me to write her biography, she said, "This is my life missions. I want to expose this ritual abuse of children that's going on." And so she had written throughout her lifetime, she had written in journals, because as a young child, she was very confused as to what was going on, because she would have these blank periods where her alters would take over. And of course, she didn't recognize that, you know, her alters were taking over. By the way, if you go into the 22 Faces website, 22faces.com, you can read the first three chapters for free, and you will see in there how a child reacts when they are multiple, you know, how the alters feelings and Jenny's feelings and how they take over. She's triggered different ways in that, in those first three chapters. But this was Jenny's main purpose in writing the book, is to tell other people what it's like to be a child and have multiple personalities, because she wanted people to recognize children who are being ritually abused right now and try to help save them. This is the whole purpose of the book. But as a young child, she was praying as to why she was having all these blank periods, and she was told through prayer that she needed to write down her experiences. So she began writing in journals quite early, and it's interesting. In fact, at the Utah State Hospital, that's one of the therapies, and it's a very common therapy for a person with disassociation, is to write, because as she would write, her alters would take over, and the alters are in there. They hold these horrible memories, and they want to get the stress out of the body. They want to tell, you know, what's gone on to them. And so they actually would take over and write in her journals as the alter personality and try to get some of their feelings out and let them know. So we used her journal writings as we wrote the book. What I did is I actually had we decided what was going to be in each chapter, and then I asked Jenny to write out the chapter, and as she would write out the chapter, you know, of what happened in that particular point in her life, her alters would take over, and they would write out their experiences, and they're very, very detailed. You know, alters, when they come out, it's as if the memory happened yesterday. It's very, very clear in their mind because they don't know what's gone on. It's just like, you know, Jenny having blank periods in her life. The alters have blank periods in their life as they don't know what went on since the last time they were out.
Yes.
And so when they first came out, you know, that memory was very, very vivid in their mind as if it just happened. So they would write those experiences down. And so that's why the book is so detailed. And actually it isn't as detailed as we first had it because it was pretty difficult. If you think it's hard to read now, you should have read it the first time. We took out a lot of the stuff.
Yes. So it means that all the different alters, they contribute separately to the total because, as you said, they don't, when they're not out, they don't know what's going on.
Right.
So it's a joining together of all these different splits, if you like, or alters that make mm-hmm. up the whole thing. My golly. Because I was reading there where Jenny used to suddenly find herself in clothes that she didn't like. Because obviously the altar that was out front at that time liked these clothes. And Jenny used to hate it. Yes, this was fascinating. And with a lot of other things I don't really want to get into. I just suggest people read the book, get the book and read it because it is a fascinating read and it really shows you about the mind, doesn't it? I mean, I don't think we've got any idea what goes on behind our eyes there.
That's interesting, isn't it, Garth? Because, I got hit by a car pretty badly, Jenny. A car hit me, but I don't remember even being in the street. I don't remember anything about what happened there. Nothing, not even one detail. So you can imagine, Garth, with this type of abuse of young kids. So I wonder what it is in the human mind that's covering this over and forcing this back, Judy. You know, protecting us in a way, but it never goes away. It's always sort of there subconsciously.
Yeah. Well, the memory is always there.
Yeah.
And the memory wants to come out. You know, the altar, sometimes there aren't even fully formed altars. It's just a split of the personality that's there, a sliver of it. But the memory always wants to come out. And so it does whenever it can. You know, if it sees, if it smells something that was there during the abuse, if it sees something, if it, even seeing the perpetrator, you know, will bring out the altar of the memory. And I can't remember what I was going to say now, so I'm lost.
It's a huge subject, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
And it's a massive subject, and it's something that is worldwide, and it appears to be at the highest level of governments. And, you know, just in this country alone, they're bringing out that recent article Adam sent me was about the high government level that's involved in this satanic treatment to children. It is rather frightening because when it's up at that level, you can see why they're closing it down and they don't want people to expose it.
Well, they're trying
because
to
it's going to expose
it.
Them, yes.
They're trying to normalize it too, Garth, as we always talk about through this terrible pornography and TV shows as well. People don't take that serious enough. But we have, Judy, now young 10-year-old boys watching hardcore pornography. And this is fracturing their mind. I'm positive of it. And Judy probably wouldn't know. In our country, Judy, our current Prime Minister, they're about to boot him out. But the guy that looks like they're going to vote in for our Labour Party, Bill Shorten, he has been investigated for raping a girl. And this was being investigated by the Victorian police. He's the leader of our opposition, Judy. This shows you how much trouble we're in. And it looks like in the next election they're going to re-vote Labour back in as the vicious circle goes round and round. But this man has been investigated for raping a woman, Garth. And as soon as he was sort of got that job of the leader of the opposition, they just dropped everything, didn't they?
Yes.
It didn't happen anymore. But why did this come out? It's very deep.
Let me tell you a couple of connections here. Jenny's mastermind controller was a man known as Dr. Green. He was from the CIA. And how we know this is that when I was doing the book with Jenny, she described, you know, Dr. Green, her mastermind controller, and he was short with balding brown hair, had a limp in his left leg, carried a cane, and had a German accent. I later investigated into the forming of the CIA and bringing over how the CIA was first organized. It was after World War II. They brought in all these Nazi mind control specialists into the U.S. and into other countries. I know there's a lot that went into Australia also. And they put them at different hospitals and universities, and they would do these mind control experiments on children. Well, this Dr. Green was actually head of the program. How we know this is that back in the 1970s, they had some congressional investigation of human experiments done on people. They didn't mention children, but they had some ritual abuse survivors came in and testify, and you can see those testimonies on the internet. And in all three of these people that testify talk about Dr. Green. Well, Dr. Green also, you know, was part of their abuse as a child. And then there's a study that was done by Dr. Corydon Hammond. Dr. Corydon Hammond is a psychologist from the University of Utah Family Practice Clinic. When they formed this International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation back in the 1980s, he went to the first meeting and he became acquainted with several therapists there. And a group of them started to do a study on their clients. And they found that 80% of their clients were programmed by this Dr. Green. And they described him, the same description of Dr. Green is the same as Jenny gave to me. And so that's how I know that, you know, Dr. Green is her mastermind controller. But the CIA program was established, of course, in the United States back then. They also, it's my understanding from talking to this Fiona Bartlett, from Australia, or you're acquainted with her. Her grandfather was one of these Nazi people that they brought into Australia. And from her information, we know that there was a group of them that were established in Australia that practiced satanic ritual abuse. And so the CIA program is all over. Another thing with Fiona is that she was abused at a military facility there in Australia, the same military facility as was Toast Ninjas from Holland. Toast Ninjas is a ritual abuse survivor. She's also a therapist, but her testimony is on the internet under the under Kevin Annette's ITCCS website, and it's also just out on the internet. But Toast also talks about being abused at the very same military facility in Australia as does Fiona. So you have all these connections here of all this web that's going on throughout the world. Ritual abuse, and that's what Kevin Ed is prosecuting over in Brussels, is this Ninth Circle Satanic Child Sacrifice cult that involves the Vatican, Queen Elizabeth, a lot of the prime ministers of various countries. And there's a lot of people in the United States involved in it too, a lot of political and other figures. So it's really ingrained throughout our society. It's just not known. And the only people that really will talk about it and expose it are ritual abuse survivors. And thank goodness for Kevin Annette and what he's been able to bring out through this international court.
Yes, he's done some fantastic work. There's no doubt about it. Dear oh me. And what do they get out of this, Judy, with children? I've heard that there's a certain energy they get. You know, there's even been talk where they can steal their soul. But to me, there's got to be other things involved in that. Why would they do these things, such horrific things to innocent children? You know, it's, what's in it for them?
They're seeking for power. Power and glory, and they're worshiping Satan. It's literal worship of Satan. And they get these feelings of power over other people. Power being able to kill a child, being able to mind control a child, that gives them this tremendous feeling of power. They're all in it together for financial reasons also. I mean, it's a very huge financial network they've got going there with the pornography and the pedophilia and all this together, and they'll have these, you know, you've heard about it with the Franklin affair and the other books about what's going on in the political arena here in the U.S., where they will have these pedophile parties where they'll have these mind-controlled children and teens there, and they'll get, you know, political people in there, and then they'll have control over them because it's, you know, they'll say, you'll vote this way, or you'll do this for us, or we're going to expose you, you know, and things like this. It's all about money and power.
Because this all ties up with David Icke. I can't think of her name, but she wrote a book on it, and she...
A Transformation of America.
Yes, yes. And yes. I found that hard to believe, but now that I've read your book... and followed some of your work, Judy, it's making a hell of a lot of sense now, because it's very hard to get into it cold and start to accept. You're starting to say to yourself, well, is this woman for real, or is she, you know, wanting attention? What's going on here? But as it's going on now, I'm just saying to myself, well, blimey, you know, how deep does this rabbit hole go?
Well, I think as more survivors come out and talk about what's happened to them, more information will come out. I think it's interesting what's happening with Prince Philip right now.
Yes.
Some of the evidence coming out. He's exposing other people, and people are saying, oh, no, we didn't do this. But the survivors are saying, yeah, we were there, you know, and you did it to us. And it's the survivors that are going to reveal this. They're going to expose this. And the more that they are able to come out and talk about it, and the more people that like you who will support their stories and help them expose this, the more it's going to come out.
Well, it certainly is, Judy, because recently an actress, a well-known actress, what's her name?
Adam, Nicole Kidman's father.
Nicole, her father. Who's a high profile, has now been accused of pedophilia. And this is shock horrors in this country, because Nicole's been held up with great esteem.
Well, they get too emotional, Garth, because it's a celebrity, you know, and they don't, that's it. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear the father's a pedophile. Well, let's look at it. Let's open this up and have an honest look. But they don't want to.
This is something that Fiona Barnett exposed, from my understanding. I did an article on her on Before It's News, and her father, Dr. Anthony Kidman, was actually Fiona's master mind controller.
Is that right?
And that's the article I did in Before It's News on that. And Fiona had a couple of really good articles there on an Australian paper also about her life, which your readers could look at there. She's had quite a life, but she claims that Nicole Kidman's father, Anthony Kidman, was her master mind controller. When Fiona went before the commission there, which I can't remember the name of the exact commission, but they're looking into this supposedly, he actually quit his job there at the university that he'd been at like for 20 or 30 years. And a couple of weeks later, he was dead, supposedly of a heart attack. But that's something that Fiona Barnett exposed, was Nicole Kidman's father.
In that, in that ring, there was another case here with a Supreme Court judge, Judge Yeldon, who was discovered. He was, the police covered up for him about four times. He was trying to solicit young boys in public toilets, and this lady in a closed session in Parliament exposed it. And he committed harikari. He committed suicide, as though it's sort of written into this satanic ring that if you get exposed, they don't want you to take the rest down, so you've got to remove yourself one way or the other, or they will do it. Could that be possible? That there's hidden law?
I think it's very possible. One of the altars, there are certain altars that seem to be formed in this mind control situation that the CIA set up. One is a suicidal altar, and they will call on those suicidal altars to commit suicide. If the person starts exposing, you know, what's going on. There's also something having to do with heart attacks. A lot of people have died mysteriously with supposedly a heart attack, and I think it has something to do with the electrical system of the body and what they've been able to do with that in order to create a heart attack. I don't know. I just know it's very, very sophisticated, and they're very adept at what they do to not let this information out.
Yeah, it's going through some type of microwave technology, Garth, like we talked about before.
Yes.
Or something implanted, whether it's something like smart dust or any type of technology. It could be through satellites. We know this smart dust is able to get into the brain and send and receive information. And it's smaller than fitting on the head of a pin, Judy. So the technology that they have is absolutely incredible. And it seems, Garth, that Judy, that they got pockets, doesn't it, Garth? Gangs. Where you've got the leaders of the pedophile group, and there must be millions of them all over the world, where you have sort of celebrities and in this group, and you have someone overlooking it, and if that group gets compromised, then, as we said, this Kidman's father, they'll just disappear. But we never get to the head of the snake, if you know what I mean. But no. It seems like that, Judy, that there's just pockets in every country of the world where these rituals are going on. And as I'm just sort of over the start of your book, getting into it, it's so creepy to think even where you live, in just general neighborhoods that you might walk your dog at night, Garth. You walk around and these satanic things are going on in some of these places, and it's just beyond belief to think that you know your own father, Garth, would do this.
Yeah.
That someone, right, you know, like little girls' fathers are participating in this ritual abuse of their own daughters. As I said, it could be going on next door, Judy. You don't know.
Well, it happened here. Now, we live in an area where there's 1,000 people. No. I think the largest count was about 800 in the village. And there was a guy, he's in his 80s, and it's an historical case. They finally nailed him, and he's well known around this area, and they've charged him 12 months ago, I don't know what's happening, with 10 counts of pedophilia to his own daughters and one count of rape. And this is in this community, you know, it's here, and when these sort of things happen, you don't know what's happening next door sort of thing with these people.
Yeah, it just seems, as I said to Judy before, it's like they do this to these children, but even when the children get older and into adulthood, these groups are still around the same areas, Garth. And how creepy is that? If someone gets exposed, it's like they dismantle, and then if it gets serious, they'll hang someone out to dry and relocate or something, Judy. It's just unbelievable.
They're very well organized.
A little too organized, I would say.
You know, the protection you have is exposure.
Yeah.
You know, the more you expose it, the less they want to be connected with you. And they will try to stay away from you if you're out there. I've been so admired Kevin Annette for his ability to speak out on practically any subject having to do with this, and he just isn't afraid, even though he's had mafia hits out on him. But they will try to stay away from you if because they don't want to be connected to you if you're exposing this. They're trying to protect themselves too.
So with Annette's work, he's exposing them at the highest level. And that sort of fits in with what you're doing, because, I mean, the CIA is a, you can't get any higher than the CIA.
Well, Bill,
I mean,
Clinton,
you're then going to call in
exposed.
Mossad and call in these people.
Bill Clinton keeps getting exposed, Garth. He's got your pal.
Well, there's another one, yes.
Old Billy, that you know, remember Judy when he came out of his court case with a hand on the Bible after his sex case? Is still going on with old Bill, and Hillary's up there. She's furious at him, of course. I'm sure she is, but he's been named again in reference to Jeffrey Epstein. So it's there we go again, Bill again. How many times with the Bushes, Garth, especially old Bush Sr.? How many times has that man been exposed? But they just seem to laugh it off. It's totally strange. It really, really is.
Well, it's very, you know, going back, it would be 15 years, I guess, since I read David Icke's book, The Biggest Secret. And he was exposing the Bushes way back then. And, of course, the trouble with David Icke was that he was into this sort of reptilian thing, and it gave people a sort of a handle to be able to ridicule him. But he's right. Now being proven correct now, because there's a lot of people coming out talking about the Archons who are controlling our minds. Now, that's another thing I'd just like to briefly talk about. With these dreadful satanic rings that are so high up in the power play, are they controlled by these Archons? Because, you know, from what I can understand about them, they're really out to, to destroy the human species.
Well, they're parasitic, Garth. There's no feelings. Yes. We call it the devil, which is fine. You know, I don't believe in the devil under the ground, but it is strange, isn't it? I think the devil could be this type of parasitic extraterrestrial force that's controlling the mind of man, because the Vatican's well into this.
Yes.
So it people laugh at it, but it has to be looked at. It seems to be, as we always say, we just feel, Judy, there's some type of presence. You can call it evil, that's just a word, whatever you want to call it, but it just feels like there's, as a human, you feel that there's just something so full of dread on this planet, because we as humans just can't understand how people could do this to children. I just don't get it. I can't, not in a million years, I can even get to try and even comprehend why this is being done. And as you said, Garth, all these people that get a little bit too close, they seem to disappear.
Yes.
I don't know if Judy knows William H. Kennedy. He wrote Lucifer's Lodge and talked about satanic ritual abuse in the Catholic Church, and evidently he died. That was really weird.
Mm-hmm. I think we're talking about two things here, though. One thing is that perpetrators do a lot of things to try to discredit the survivor story. And one of the things they do that I have heard quite frequently is that they will dress up in costumes. You know, you have a child here and they've been given drugs. That's also part of the abuse. Is they'll, first of all, they'll give them drugs to get their mind, you know, thinking crazy things. And then they will dress up in costumes, very elaborate type of makeup, to appear to be certain people or to appear to be animals or whatever.
White
and then
faces,
they will
Judy,
abuse
as well?
Them. They will abuse them so that when that memory comes back, that memory may be of a reptile abusing them or whatever, you know, when it was actually, you know, a very Hollywood setup thing that happened. That's one thing that happens. The other thing is that to kind of give you a background of where I'm coming from is that I'm LDS, and we believe that there was a, before we came to Earth, there was a war in heaven. And in that war, there was Satan who said, you know, you can come down to Earth and, you know, not have a choice, you know, and you can do what you want. And the other person, who we believe is Jesus Christ, said, no, I'm going to send down these souls down to Earth, and they will prove themselves on Earth, and how they prove themselves will determine where they will be in heaven when they, you know, come back to me. And Heavenly Father said, well, we're going to take Jesus Christ's plan, and the people go to Earth and they will prove themselves. But those souls that decide to go under Lucifer's plan will not be able to have bodies. So I believe that Lucifer is trying very hard to create these spirits are trying very hard to get into the bodies of different people. And they do this through this satanic worship and stuff. And I believe that Satan does have a certain amount of power, but it's very, very limited. And these spirits that followed Satan are trying very hard to take over the bodies of other the bodies of these little children that are being ritually abused. I know in Jenny's story in the state hospital, she had three takeovers where evil spirits actually entered her body. And she says that evil spirit takeover is very, very different from an alter personality takeover. She says it's something, it's an energy from the outside that comes into your body and then takes over the body. And she had some blessings, you know, to release those. And many ritual abuse survivors have problems with these evil spirit takeovers, you know, and they do have to have priesthood blessings or blessings, you know, to get the spirit out of their body. But she says it's very different. She says an altar is an energy force. It's part of my personality. It's within me. But an evil spirit takeover is an energy outside of my body. So it is my personal belief that yes, there is an evil spirit. There are evil spirits. There, Lucifer, you know, who is over them, and they are trying to, you know, control other people because they weren't allowed to have bodies. But that's just my own personal belief of that situation. But the other part of that, of course, like I say, is that these perpetrators will do just elaborate things to try to prove that this memory that will eventually come back, you know, isn't true or couldn't possibly be true. For instance, we had a case here in Utah where it's called the Hadfield case, and it was a ritual abuse case where there was two children of this Alan Hadfield were saying that, you know, their father sexually abused them. They also said the whole neighborhood of abusers also abused them. And as they got into the case, by the way, he was convicted and sent to prison for pedophilia. But during the case, what was really interesting about this case is these special investigators had been hired, you know, after the LDS report came out. They were very involved in this Hadfield case, and the therapist in that case interviewed a lot of children in that particular neighborhood and found out that they had been, the children were saying that they had been abused, you know, by a whole group of pedophiles in that neighborhood. The children also came out with some stories about being in the temple in the Salt Lake temple being abused. And we found out from that information that it actually wasn't the Salt Lake Temple, that there is a building down the street from the temple that was actually built, and the basement of that building was built like the inside of the Salt Lake Temple. And that they would take these little children, they would give them drugs, and then they would take them, you know, into this place, and they would abuse them in this place. And so when that memory came back, you know, 20, 30 years later, they thought that they were abused in the Salt Lake Temple. That's how elaborate, you know, these hoaxes are when these perpetrators set up the scenario initially. They'll put makeup on, Hollywood makeup, and make them appear like some prominent figure in the community. So that when this memory comes back, they'll say, well, this person abused me. Well, you know, type of person that everybody knows they would never abuse them. But the child under drugs thinks that that person abused me just because of the setup of how this was.
So, dear, and that's, you know, to innocent people that weren't involved, this must be terrible. You know, for something like that to come into your life, when a child accuses you of doing something, and that person didn't.
Yeah, that's how they discredit, you know, the testimonies. That's how they get away with it.
And that could also compromise people at in higher levels.
Yes, yeah. Right.
Oh dear, that's never ending, isn't it?
Yes.
It's just never ending.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah, I don't know. But it's being exposed, and it's work that you're doing, Judy, and Kevin Arnett, and people like that. David Icke, you know, a lot of people rubbish him, but he's done a lot of great work. He certainly doesn't pull any punches, as you don't, and Kevin Arnett. You surely get into it, and this is where it's going to hit home when we start to see where the Queen is being questioned, the Pope, you know, and we're getting Prime Ministers being exposed, particularly in England.
Well, Canada now, Garth, there was from childabuserecovery.com, Judy, that came out the other day, didn't it, about child sacrifices tied to Vatican Mafia and the Canadian Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, which you contribute to that side. That's absolutely unbelievable, Garth.
Yes.
And they're saying that these two children were raped and killed as part of Pope Francis's February 22nd cardinal inauguration of Quebec Archbishop, and this is Gerald Lacroix, I think, according to a report. That's what it's saying on the site here, and this is going through the International Common Law Court of Justice in Brussels, and they're claiming eyewitnesses claim Cardinal Lacroix, Catholic Jesuit Superior General Adolfo Pachon, and Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper's senior cabinet minister, Denis Lebel, participated in the rape and human sacrifice of a 5 or 6 year old boy and a small girl. And there's a video as well. It's all documented. This is from Child Abuse Recovery, which I've been going to for a long time, even before I decided to contact Judy. So incredible site there, Garth. I send them to you all the time. Yes. So this is all going through the courts over there as well. Incredible stuff. It's unbelievable, Judy.
Do you think, Judy, with these courts?
I'm so excited that Kevin Arnett is bringing all this out. I mean, they've had over 60 eyewitnesses before that court. Over 60.
60?
These are people that are generally ritual abuse survivors, and they're from all over the world. But they're coming out with their stories, and that's how they're going to get these people, is through the survivors being brave enough to come out and tell their stories.
So they can't close it down, can they? I mean, it's going through a court system.
This is the International Common Law Court of Justice in Brussels that Kevin Arnett's organization organized. But they're valid judges. I think there's been 56 different jurors that have served on the different courts they've had over there. There's a New York law firm that's been involved in all that. But it's because they couldn't bring it they can't bring it into the courts in Canada. The courts in Canada wouldn't even take the cases. 50,000 children disappeared in those residential schools, and they wouldn't even allow them to file depositions in court. And so he had to take it over to Brussels to get it litigated, but he's doing fantastic work.
And when all this comes out and these people give their evidence, what's the next step? Because I have a view here. I think if they're proven guilty, they should be put down.
Oh, they step down, Garth, like the Catholic Church. They step down.
Put down with a bullet in the
like
head or something.
Like the Black Pope. I'm just going to step down. Yes, all right. On a nice retirement pension. That's what these people do, Judy. They get exposed and they step down. They should be lynched. Hung up.
Well, they should step down on the gallows.
Yeah, hung up.
Well, Pope Ratzinger stepped down. They actually convicted Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip of taking those 10 children from the Kamloops Residential School.
Yes.
Back on October the 10th, 1964, 10 children disappeared from the Kamloops Residential School. They went off with Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip. Their parents haven't seen them since. And that was one of the convictions that the International Court made. Of course, they, put out a warrant for their arrest, and of course, they haven't been able to, do anything about it. But one of their purposes is to expose this, and hopefully at some point, the people will get in arms enough that they will, start being able to recognize some of these common law courts. Kevin Arnett has established common law courts all over the world. I don't know his last count, but I know he had 6 or 7 in the United States that were going on right now. And then he's starting another one. I think it's tomorrow up in Canada. You talked about this Lebel. He's also connected them to these children and women, Native women that have disappeared off the west coast of Canada in the 12 Mile High Club, they call it. It's these very politically rich people that have their yachts, and they will kidnap these women and Native women and children and take them out in these yachts, and they'll have their little satanic ceremonies out there, and then they'll throw the bodies out in the ocean. It's called the 12 Mile High Club because 12 miles outside of Canadian borders, they're out in international waters, and that's when they do their thing. But they're also connecting that into the Harper government, and that's one of the common law courts that's beginning this Thursday up in Canada.
Oh, gee, that because it's it was also they were doing the same in England. I read about a few weeks back. He had that quite a famous yacht, and they used to go on and they'd throw these kids overboard.
Who was that, Garth? You broke up there. Who was that?
Hello.
Who were you talking about?
I can't think of his name. He was the Prime Minister of England.
Oh, right.
Dear me. I've got it here somewhere, but I've got so much stuff here I can't find it. But anyway, yes, they exposed him.
Yeah,
was fairly recent.
David Cameron's top advisor has just been exposed, Judy, as well, not long ago, for all these child images as well. And that just sort of got hushed up. And also, Judy, we heard, didn't we, about Jimmy Savile, how his last police interview, there was parts of that taken out on direct orders from Buckingham Palace, which obviously mentioned them. So, you know, that was done in front of the whole world, Judy. So, I mean, they're just doing it in broad daylight now. So that says to me, that sort of reeks of a bit of a, you know, it sounds a bit desperate. So, you know, I think that, as you said, hopefully we can all just keep exposing this and keep the pressure on the keep the chokehold going and just keep talking about it. That's why we started Facebook and Twitter. I never used it before, but we started it with this show, and it's been very successful. And, you know, anything I get off you or the child recovery sites, anything that I hear, don't I, Garth, we put it up. And we just try and talk about it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Are you acquainted with Bill Maloney?
What's that?
Are you acquainted with Bill Maloney? He's from the UK. He was a survivor from, I can't remember the island, there in the UK. Anyway, he's done a lot to expose what's going on over in the UK and Seville and Queen Elizabeth and all that over there. You ought to look him up. He's done quite a bit of work there.
Yeah,
but he talked about these yachts going out in the ocean. He talks about that. There's a island that the Queen owns. And dang, I can't remember the name of it, but it's right there. It's an island that she actually owns. It's not part of the UK. It's just privately owned by the, and it has some an orphanage on there and some other residential schools for children, and some of those children have disappeared on yachts out in the ocean.
Yeah, right. That's frightening, isn't it?
Hello, I'm back on.
Yeah, you're right, Garth.
Okay.
Oh, you've paused Judy again.
Yes, it keeps clicking out.
I'll just finish up with her then.
Yes.
Hang on a sec. Hi, Judy.
Hi, we're back.
Yeah, Garth's having some problems there, so that's all right. We'll finish up now, but he must be having some storms up there or something and having some little bit of dropout issues as you get on Skype. As I was just asking you about that island, so it's unbelievable stuff. But I guess, Judy, at the end of the day, we can't be negative ourselves about it, can we? We can't be scared and be negative in any way. We have to sort of hold hands together and form a bonding, loving relationship with everyone involved in this, like yourself, and work together to expose this. And that's what we want to do, particularly this year, is just keep exposing these people the best we can. And as I said, get off our hands and get up and use our voice to at least talk about this and because, you know, I think it's just God knows, you know, Judy, how long this has gone on. I'd say a very, very long time. I don't know how you've managed through the years to stay sane with the work that you've done, you know.
I had a very spiritual experience before I began writing 22 Faces, and I feel like it's literally my mission to expose this and have been told so. And that's another thing I wanted to say about Jenny's story is that even though there are some dark parts in it, there's also a very spiritual side to that story, how she was saved from being sacrificed in a satanic ceremony, and how she was told to write down her life experiences and how Heavenly Father has helped her throughout her life. Jenny is a very spiritual person, and it's a very uplifting in a lot of ways, even though there's the very dark side. That's what I find about ritual abuse survivors, is that even though they have been through all this turmoil and trauma in their life, they're very, very strong people, very, very intelligent people.
Yeah.
And people who have a very strong spiritual self about them. I spoke at a conference back in Connecticut a couple of years ago, and I asked the people in the room who were mainly ritual abuse survivors if they had any spiritual experiences, and every single one of them raised their hand.
Yeah.
So Heavenly Father is out there, and he's watching over, and I think as long as we are guided by him, we can get this information out. And like you say, we need to stick together and support each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always fascinated us on this show why, you know, they say we're all brothers and sisters. We're all humans, skin and bone, which I guess we are, but it just fascinates me why these people are like this. You know, it's just really does. Maybe we're just more highly evolved in this lifetime, you know? I don't know, but I just don't understand, you know, these high-profile people are just doing this like it's a walk in the park, and they smile about it, they smirk about it on the TV screens, and they seem to think that this is funny because they're going to get away with it, and we must make sure that they don't get away with it. And Godspeed to guys like Kevin Arnett and yourself, who are doing so much work to expose this. You know, we wouldn't be here without you in a way. You know, you guys have got the big voice, and we just try and help in the background and get this word out. So, you know, it's we could probably poor Garth, Judy. I'm sure I'll get him back, but yeah, it's like I'm sure we could talk to you for a lot longer. As you said at the start, there's so much more to go into this. So I would say we generally don't have many guests on this show, but we do like to keep in touch with the guests we do have on, and whenever you have spare time, we would like to have you on again, just to keep going through your book and any you know, news you have or updates you might have to share it with us. And it's a free Skype call, so you know, whenever you're able, I'll keep in touch, and we can get you on the show again as many times as you want, and just keep having a chat about this. What do you reckon?
I would love to do that. I would love to keep you updated on what's going on. The other thing I wanted to say is that I do have two websites. So
yeah,
one
we'll
is
go through that now, and also, yeah, make sure people
faces.
Know.
Yeah, 22faces.com, 22faces.com. You can buy the book there. You can buy it an ebook, or I can send you an autographed copy, or you can obtain it on Amazon. But the book, there's a lot of good information there from ritual abuse survivors and from Jenny on that website. The other website is childabuserecovery.com.
Great site.
And there's a lot of good information on there. Also on that site is a petition, which we are petitioning Congress. We're trying to work with some senators to get another investigation going on the CIA mind control of children. And if your listeners would please go into their website and click onto the petition and sign your name. We're trying to interest Congress in doing a real investigation this time on the CIA control of, mind control of children, because it's going on right now. If you go into the early parts of that petition, in the first 50 comments, you will find survivors from all over the world talking about they being mind controlled through the CIA. And it's going on right now. Children are being hurt, and we need to do something about it.
Yeah, well, we could do another show soon about this, and you could go into that as much as you want and get more of that information out as well. And, of course, I'll put the links to the sites up and your information on our main Podomatic podcasting page, and that goes to iTunes and other places as well. And people, to make sure, that's 22faces.com, but that's double two. 22faces.com, and there you can read the first three chapters of the book free, and you can buy the ebook, as Judy said, or order the paperback version signed. Why not? If you're in the United States, you can get a signed copy off Judy, so that's very good and great price, and you can add it to your cart and buy it right off 22faces.com, which makes it easier, or you can go to Amazon. As I said, Judy, it's a dense book. It's bigger than I expected. It took me a bit by surprise. And Garth's a machine. He reads so many books. And I don't get a lot of time for myself. So, it's much more heavier than I thought. And there's a lot of work in that book. So if people are interested in your work and what we did today, I highly recommend folks to go and get this book because it's a remarkable achievement, Jenny. And, what you've done in your career is incredible, and how you've helped these people and this lady is amazing. And I think, we need more people like you on this planet, Jenny. Judy?
Well, thank you. I appreciate you helping us out by exposing this. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, and God bless to Jenny Hill. And you'll read her story in the books. And in the book, it's an amazing, amazing story and how you're able to help her and the work that you're doing there, Judy. So thank you very much for all your great work. And thanks for talking with us today on the show. It's a complicated issue. It's a dark issue. But as we said, we just need to keep discussing it, don't we? And we hope to have you on again soon. And I'll keep sending you articles as they come in, and we'll keep in touch. And as I said, when you've got some spare time, come and have a chat with us again.
Thank you so much.